take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, and welcome to the program. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, coming to you live and direct from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. Welcome to the program today. We've got a lot to cover, including another look at the state of Idaho. We're going to focus on the brown shirt event that happened, the town hall meeting where Dr. Teresa Borenpaul was hauled out of the meeting for expressing her views. And I'm going to give you a little background on the Idaho politics behind that and what exactly it was she was protesting. Also coming up on the show today, we're going to have a look at the most recent actions by this administration and how would it be any different if we were being under attack by an enemy than what they're doing right now? We've also got a new bit of information on the press conference. I just want to start with this right now before we even get to what I had planned on the show, because this just concluded a little bit ago. It was a press conference where Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, was there with, I guess it was President Trump and J.D. Vance, the vice president, and a bunch of people. And this press conference devolved into a shouting match where Trump and Vance are just hectoring President Zelensky and saying he disrespects America. I'm getting some of this from NBC News, where J.D. Vance said that they needed to use more diplomacy, that Zelensky wasn't being diplomatic in trying to end this war of aggression that Russia started. And Zelensky said he killed our people and he didn't exchange prisoners. What kind of diplomacy, JD, are you speaking about? What do you mean? JD Vance shoots back, I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country. I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media right now. Once again, trying to gaslight people into thinking that Ukraine had anything to do with getting itself invaded by Russia. It's just offensive what's going on here. It continued, Vance continued to say, I've actually watched and seen the stories, and I know what happens is you bring these people on a propaganda tour. Do you think it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country? And again, all this administration is trying to do is to get as much mineral rights out of Ukraine by extorting them for the support. And there's been innumerable times now, at least twice that I've seen, that a foreign leader has had to contradict Trump live at a press conference. I believe Emmanuel Macron, president of France, had to come up when Trump tries to spread the lie that, oh, well, you know, we're putting all this money into Ukraine. The European Union put money in, but they're going to get all their money back. And the president of France had to say, no, we gave that money. We're not getting it back. Keir Starmer, the prime minister of the UK, same sort of situation, had to tell him, no, we're not getting our money back. We're giving more money than the United States has given. And for us to betray our allies like this is just amazing to me, just how far we've fallen in just these 2 months. And I'll have more to say about it on next week's show when I can get a little more digestion of it. But I haven't even seen the video yet. I want to wait to see that video, and we'll talk about that some more on the next program. But for right now, what I'd like to get to is our original topics. We're going to talk about the seven deadly topics today, including the latest attack on transgender Americans and basically a backdoor effort to try to ban transgender foreigners from being able to come to the United States of America. And this ban, orchestrated by someone that the Senate Democrats supported 100%. Also coming up, we've got a new advertisement from Fuke Pharmaceuticals. I want to thank Fuke for stepping up to help support the Radical Rush Show. We're also, like I said, take a look at that Dr. Teresa Borenpaul protest up in North Idaho, where she was taken out by the unmarked security people. We got the updates on that, as well as her GoFundMe. And I'm going to break down what exactly it was she was protesting about that made them so mad they had to kick her out. We'll also get to my radical rant on how we are at war in the United States, and it's time the Democratic Party started to recognize that. But first, let me get to my opening thoughts on the economic blackout and the lack of Democratic leadership. So today, February 28th, was the call for the economic blackout, for people to not spend any money, not use their credit cards, don't get fast food, etc. For some of us, economic blackout is pretty simple because we don't spend money every day. Like, I'm just amazed when these kind of things come up. Do your best not to spend any money. Man, I'm doing my best to try to spend money. I'm poor. I know a lot of poor people out here are like, economic blackout. Yeah, I can handle that. No problem. And I've seen some calls on the net. I've been following Blue Sky, and you can follow me on Blue Sky at RadicalRust.com. Some people on Blue Sky that are poo-pooing this effort to try to do an economic boycott. Oh, one day economic boycott won't mean anything. They don't check out their bottom line on a day-by-day basis. If you bought all your stuff the day before or the day after, it's really going to be a wash anyway. Huh, talk about your Debbie Downers. Look, what other powers do we have? We don't have our courts anymore. They're not going to save us. Our politicians have shown they're not going to save us. What other options do we have? The way I see it, we've got our purchasing power. We've got our labor. We could go on a general strike, which I think would be a great idea. I think would be even more effective than an economic blackout. We've got our bodies. We could be marching in the streets and shutting down Congress or shutting down our state houses, I guess. And then the last option is our Second Amendment. And I don't want it to come to that. And so many people right now are starting to see that we're in a situation where, I mean, history has shown us that when you peacefully install a fascist, you can never peacefully uninstall a fascist. The first time we tried to peacefully uninstall this fascist, he led an insurrection at the Capitol to try to hang his vice president and kill the Speaker of the House. It's going to be worse next time. People need to start getting their heads around this reality. The old rules don't matter anymore. The old norms don't matter anymore. But we can't have this just be a chaotic free-for-all where one group is proposing an economic blackout, another one's proposing a general strike, this other one's doing this. We need leadership. We need someone to get behind, because I'll tell you one thing that this 2 months of Trump has shown all of us is that we don't need to bow down to the Lieber Fetterman Chinamentarian anymore. These excuses that we've gotten from Democratic leaders over the years, oh, gosh, we can't raise the minimum wage. Why, the Senate parliamentarian said we can't. Oh, gosh, we can't pass universal health care because Joe Lieberman doesn't want it, and so on and so on. What we've seen from Trump and these people is that when you have a party that's organized around a strong leader, you have a whole lot of power. There's a whole lot of things that you can accomplish with that power. And I saw this interview with Governor Tim Walz. It was on Molly Jong Fast Politics podcast. And remember, Governor Walz in the state of Minnesota is leading a state that has always been a very progressive state. Their Democrats are called Democrat Farm Labor Party, right? They remember their roots of farming and labor and unions and working people and the poor. And so he was interviewed, Molly Jong Fast, and he had this to say. He said, quote, "When we get back, which we will, we'll fight. I'll tell you what people are going to expect is they're not going to expect us to tinker around the edge with the Affordable Care Act. They're going to expect universal health care. A saying I always said is you lead with good policy and good politics will follow." That's what people are looking for, a Democratic Party that's willing to swing for the fences, that's willing to go left, to remember that the purpose of government is to provide for the general welfare, to create a more perfect union, to be the power of the people against the power of business, against the power of monopoly, against the power of great concentrated wealth. We learned this lesson early in the last century, about 100 years ago, 100 to 90 years ago, we learned this lesson. Why is it taking so long for us to relearn it? Walz continued, quote, "If there's a lesson here, I always said this. We had a one-vote majority in Minnesota when we moved clean energy. We moved reproductive rights. We moved a whole slew of progressive, very popular, including things around guns and gun safety, very popular things. We moved it with a one-vote majority." Now, you remember my show from last week I showed you this little map that I made, this little chart of the terms of presidencies, with the red arrows representing the Republican terms and the blue arrows representing the Democratic terms. And what you see from this map is four separate times where the Republicans were able to string together three or more consecutive terms. On the Democratic side, that happened once. Once, and that was 1932 to 1952, the five consecutive terms of Franklin Delano Roosevelt through Harry Truman. Now, how did Franklin Delano Roosevelt manage to put together five consecutive terms, be able to pass that on to Harry Truman as vice president? Because he was unapologetically for the people. We had just gotten through, just heading into, the devastating Great Depression. We had just learned the lesson that the robber barons and the monopolies would have no problem bankrupting this country and sending its people into soup kitchens, into Hoovervilles, into abject poverty, because money don't care. President Roosevelt ran on a second Bill of Rights for every American, saying that every American has the right to a job, that every American has the right to an adequate wage and a decent living. And when he said decent living, he didn't mean subsistence living, just barely scraping by. He meant if you worked 40 hours a week, you should have a decent living. You should have fun. You should have vacations. You should have good stuff. That we should all have a decent home. That being housed in America should be a right. I am so embarrassed for our country every time I drive through town and see the tents in the parks of our neighbors without housing, whose government doesn't give a damn about them. Why? That could be any one of us. Every one of you listening to me is 3 months closer to homelessness than you are to being a billionaire. It can happen to anyone. Anyone. Medical care. We all deserve medical care, and not this, oh, how can we take Mitt Romney's plan and keep the insurance companies in business while getting some health care to a few more people? No, it seems like 32 out of 33 of the economically developed countries in this world have figured out universal health care. I've never understood why these MAGA people, Make America Great people, think dying in America because you can't afford healthcare makes us great. And again, if there's anything that levels all of us out, it's the fact that any one of us can have a health issue. Franklin Roosevelt ran on economic protection during sickness, accident, old age, or unemployment, the social safety net that is currently being dismantled by this Doge, unelected Elon Musk garbage. And the second Bill of Rights also included the right to a good education, that we should all be able to get a good education. This shouldn't be something that is reserved for just the rich people to be able to afford. And I'll tell you, we could have all these things except for one glaring problem in America: racism. I know a lot of people think, I'll say this every time, that they'll bring up, you know, I'll see people bring up these lists of countries based on rankings of who's the happiest or who's got the best health care or, you know, best maternal leave, whatever, highest life expectancy. Name a statistic for which it's good for people. And they'll show, oh, well, look at all these Scandinavian countries and Norway and Denmark and I guess, is Denmark Scandinavian? No, but Norway and Sweden and so forth. But these European countries that are always at the top of the list. And I remind them, we'd be at the top of the list, too, if it weren't for racism. If our countries were all white, homogenous countries like those were, we'd have those things, too. And people get shocked when I say that, oh, Rush, you see racism and everything. Hey, just look at our history. Look at how the University of California had basically free in-state tuition, or really low-cost in-state tuition. Anyone who lived in the state could go to school there. And that was pretty much the same in a lot of other states, too. Free in-state tuition, because we want to invest in our people and make better citizens. Until Brown versus Board of Education happened, and they said, oh, yeah, you got to let black people have those, too. Suddenly, all that tuition started going way up, didn't it? We saw it with, you know, public pools, when white people would fill the pools in with cement rather than share them with black people. That's what it all comes down to, folks. The end of welfare as we know it, that started with Ronald Reagan, was perpetuated on the myth of the black welfare queen. Every bit of our social safety net has either been compromised or torn down based on the idea that those people don't deserve it. Those people are committing fraud. Those people are making things terrible. So we need to get around this racism if we ever want to start the Second Bill of Rights. And it's time for Democrats to rally behind a leader who sees this necessity, who understands that we are craving someone to stand up for us, the people who aren't the donors, who aren't the corporations. And with that, I'd like to just mention that this lady here, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is now 35 years old. She is constitutionally eligible to run for president, and I don't think she could start that campaign too soon. I know she's in the House and she still has to run for re-election in 2026, but what are we waiting for? Are we even going to have elections by then? Let's get going now. And I would encourage her to start now and start building that support. And I've heard the complaints to, oh, you know, she's too young and the right has made her a target. They have already made her a target. They've made her the squad in the face of the progressives and the defund the police or whatever buzzword that Fox News has got them scared about right now. So what? I am really tired of Democrats trying to plan everything based on what Republicans might do. Look, Republicans are going to be jerks. They're going to attack whoever you put forth. And at least putting forth someone like AOC, who understands the current political climate, who isn't cowed by having lived through the Reagan massacres of 1980 and 84, who hasn't subscribed to the Clintonian neoliberal third way that thinks that we can just be GOP light, we can be pro-business, we can be pro-economics, just with rainbows and black people, that someone that really understands that we need to be a people-powered party, a party for the poor, a party that stands up and says, big government is good. Big government is how we accomplish big things. Big government is how we went to the moon. Big government is how we built the interstate highway system, freeway system, right? But no, we've still got Democrats who start in the frame of agreeing that big government's a bad thing and we need to do it better and more efficiently and we need to cut it down, instead of unapologetically saying that big government, good government, is about us, the people, is about helping the people. And I got to agree with Oliver Willis online. If you follow him on Blue Sky, O. Willis 1977, he's been covering this since the Bush administration. And he's right. We've run the accomplished, competent centrists, Al Gore, John Kerry, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris. And we got one win out of those five. We lost four times to W, this C student AWOL bumpkin, and twice to Trump, with the most competent people you could, well overqualified people that you could name. Why? Because they didn't feel like they were our people. Al Gore, John Kerry felt distant. Hillary Clinton felt distant. Kamala Harris felt a part of that system that has been kowtowing to donors and the PACs and ignoring what the people need. And when was the one time we had a really huge win? That was Barack Obama, of course, who got a plus 7% popular vote margin, had 57 to 60 Democratic senators, and had over a 50 vote margin in the House when he was elected in 2008. Because he was the hope and change guy. He was the young guy compared to Hillary being the establishment candidate. He was the one that was proposing si se puede and yes we can and hope and change. And of course, once he got in, tacked right back to the center, listened to all the donor class, listened to all the consultant class, and proceeded to lose his House majority and proceeded to lose all the opportunities in the next 6 years of his term to be two terms to be able to make progress in this country. So I don't think AOC is a bad idea at all. I think the people would rally behind her. I think people find her authentic. And I think she could be transformative to this country. All right, as you know, I'm a man of many eclectic and varied tastes, but really it just breaks down to seven things that I'm interested in: sex, drugs, rock and roll, politics, religion, sports, and science. It's this little rapid-fire segment that we call the Seven Deadly Topics. Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Sex. Secretary of State Marco Rubio moves to ban transgender passport holders. So what's going on here is that he has directed the Department of State to reject anyone coming into the United States whose passport marker of their gender does not match their sex at birth. So someone like Hunter Schafer, the star of HBO's Euphoria, a transgender woman, who is going to have to get a passport marker that says she's male. And what's the point of this? At what point is someone being identified? Do we need to know whether they have a penis or not? Really, the only thing I can think of is if you're going to arrest them and you need to know which prison cell you're going to put them in. And still, I think there's probably a better way around that. Oh, and don't forget, 100% of the Senate Democrats voted for Marco Rubio to be Secretary of State. Drugs. Idaho Governor Brad Little has signed a $300 mandatory minimum fine for marijuana possession into law. Gee, Governor, $300, huh? Why not 420, right? As you know, Idaho is one of the few remaining states that maintains an absolute prohibition on the possession of marijuana. If you're caught with marijuana in Idaho, the cops can stop your car, pull all the stuff out onto the side of the road, rifle through it, put handcuffs on you, take you to jail, book you, fingerprint you, get you a mugshot that'll be searchable on the internet forever, and give you a drug criminal record that'll affect your employment, your educational opportunities for the rest of your life. But that wasn't enough. Let's make sure that also costs them $300, even though the fine already is up to $1,000. They think this is going to stop marijuana, but remember, folks, Idahoans buy at least $10 million of marijuana from border states every month. Oh, rock and roll. Well, we're going to adjust this a bit and talk about Hollywood because we lost Gene Hackman this week. The 95-year-old actor was found dead in his home along with his wife and a dog with very interesting but not apparently foul play circumstances. Gene Hackman, of course, one of my favorite actors of all time. His work in Unforgiven, The French Connection, so many amazing movies and performances that he's given us. But for me, I'll always remember him in Young Frankenstein, and Mel Brooks had some wonderful stuff to say about him online on Blue Sky recently. And it also brought to mind the fact that, you know, Terry Garr passed away about 3 months ago. And so with the death of Gene Hackman, Mel Brooks has outlived the entire cast of the movie Young Frankenstein. Our condolences go out to Hackman's family and friends. I just saw that President Trump is going to sign an executive order to make English the official U.S. language, and I think there's a severe problem there. I think if a president is to propose an official language for the country, he ought to be able to speak and write it. This is the guy that gave us the word covfefe and hamburgers and stolen with S-T-O-L-L-E-N and choking, C-H-O-C-K-I-N-G. This is the guy who's going to make English the official language. Look, we haven't had an official language for the entirety of our nation, and there is no reason to have one. The whole point of America, at least as I understood it, was the place where everybody of any language could feel welcome. Trying to set English as the official language is just another step in this white Christian nationalism to specify that some of us are more equal than others, and some of us are more American than others. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a First Amendment problem to make English the first official language. Oh, talk about some weirdness coming on the religion side of things. Did you see that AI Trump Gaza video that came out? Oh my God, what a... the whole video was basically starting off with the destruction of Gaza, the rubble, and then showed how it could be gentrified and turned into this beautiful waterfront paradise with Elon Musk eating whatever that is and children flying golden Trump balloons. My favorite part, of course, was the bearded hula dancers. You know the people putting this were just putting prompts into whatever AI video engine, and they said, Muslim hula dancers. And of course, they got guys with beards. So, not even very good production value, but it's just so offensive that we would go in and destroy this country and cooperate with Bibi Netanyahu in this genocidal ethnic cleansing so Donald Trump and Jared Kushner can have some waterfront property sell off and make money on. It's just sick. In sports, former Vikings punter Chris Cluey has been fired as a ninth grade football coach. You remember from last week, Chris Cluey, the former punter for the Vikings, spoke out at the Huntington Beach City Council meeting protesting MAGA as a Nazi movement and then using civil disobedience to sit himself down and get himself arrested. Well, the school, the high school, or maybe it's a middle school, I'm not sure, the school that he was coaching, he was a special coach for special teams there, has fired him because he's bringing too much attention to the school. Yeah, good luck finding another former NFL player who's going to coach freshman football. This just goes to show again how our First Amendment rights are being very circumspect at this point, being kept from us, and this cancel culture that the right supposedly has against the left is once again their case of projection. They're the ones that cancel. Oh, and in science, we had our first measles death in the United States since 2015. Case of an unvaccinated child in Gaines County, Texas. There's now 130 cases or more in two states, and I just read a report of someone who was on a Seoul, Korea to LAX flight who had measles. And so now, of course, all the people on that flight and all the people they dealt with and all the people from that point on could possibly be spreading the measles. You know, the average person who gets the measles can spread it to about 25 people. And measles is dormant for about 2 weeks. So you don't even know you got it for 2 weeks while you're spreading it to other people. Gaines County, Texas has a vaccination rate of 82%. You need about 95% to have herd immunity. So get ready for more measles, mumps, and rubella. And for people my age, Gen Xers, you're going to need an update because our old vaccines weren't as good. And that's all the time we've got for the seven deadly topics. And I'm going to remind you, you can contact the Radical Russ Show. You can find us at radicalruss@gmail.com. If you are interested in sending an email, you can find me on Blue Sky. I'm at radicalrust.com on Blue Sky. The website is radicalrust.com and the online store is radrust.com. We also have a toll-free call-in number if you'd like to leave a voice message. It's 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And I'm at Radical Russ on everything else out there. But if it's owned by a billionaire, I'm not checking it. All right, let's take a break with a message from our sponsor. The Radical Russ Show is brought to you by Fuke Pharmaceuticals, creating lifelong customers since 1905. Are you a MAGA voter who just lost your federal job? Did you vote for Trump for lower egg prices, only to find your insulin now costs $800 a month? Have you wondered how exactly pissing off all our allies makes America great again? Were you waiting to see the release of the Epstein files, only to get the release of the alleged sex trafficking Tate brothers? Ask your doctor about Leopard Face Cream, new from Fuke Pharmaceuticals. Leopard Face Cream soothes and relieves the feelings of regret and despair for MAGA voters who never thought the people they were voting to hurt would be themselves. Leopard Face Cream works by boosting the natural patriotism and ignorance of the MAGA voter to convince them that their suffering is necessary to ensure the suffering of people they hate. Warning: do not use Leopard Face Cream if you possess empathy, consideration, or morality. Side effects of Leopard Face Cream include the return of measles, the end of flu shots, and a general rise in American mortality. Tell your doctor right away if... Actually, don't bother. The scientists at the National Institutes of Health who were studying the side effects of leopard face cream were just fired. Well, thank you, Fuke Pharmaceuticals, makers of Republican Empathy and Leopard Face Cream. It's going to be so funny in the coming months as MAGA starts to realize what's happened, don't you think? Because all these MAGA that have the little elk stickers on the back of their truck, they're going to go hunting and fishing and boating and camping, find out that the campgrounds, the restrooms are shut down. Some of the campgrounds aren't open anymore. The boating ramps are closed. The lakes are overrun with algae. The reservoirs are shut down. Oh, it's going to be fun once they realize just exactly what they voted for. Oh, and when Medicaid and stops paying for the assisted housing, and grandma and grandpa have to move into the McMansion, that'll be fun. And when the kids are back at home to be homeschooled because of the latest measles outbreak or flu outbreak or RSV outbreak or the bird flu outbreak or whatever the hell next is coming, oh boy, it's going to be fun when MAGA finds all that stuff out. And I guess what's going to be interesting is, what is it going to take for us to welcome them into a coalition to end fascism? I know there's going to be a lot of people feeling like, you know, leopards ate your face, boo-hoo, sorry for you. But we're going to need to band together, and we're going to have to find a way to be able to accept them into the coalition. I don't know. I think it's going to require some apologies, though, if you ask me. It's time for a blue state boycott of the state of Idaho, particularly the potatoes. Idaho, like many of the red states, is instituting terrible policies that harm women, LGBTQ people, the disabled, immigrants, and religious, ethnic, and racial minorities. But no state is more directly associated with one product than the Idaho potato. They even brag about it on their license plates. And boycotting Idaho harms communities of color less, since there are so few living there. It's time for the economically superior blue states to put the hurt on the aggressive red states. Here's another reason to boycott Idaho, the handmaid state. So, the big story coming out of Idaho this last week was the case of Teresa Borenpahl, Teresa Borenpahl. The Kootenai County Republicans up in North Idaho were having a town hall meeting. And Kootenai County is in the North Idaho, like the Panhandle region. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is its biggest city. And this town hall was overflowing, tons of people there, and people were upset. People were shouting out their upset and their disagreements with the Republicans, one of whom was Dr. Teresa Borenpahl. And one of the things she shouted out was, is this a town hall or a lecture? And the next thing she knew, she had three unidentified men pulling her out of the audience while the Kootenai County Sheriff was there telling her that she needed to leave, wearing stuff that identified him as a sheriff, but would not identify whether or not these men were deputies of his, whether they were security people. Well, it turns out they were security people from a company called Lear Security, and they were in violation of Coeur d'Alene City Code that says anybody that's a security person, hired security at a place, has to have the word security on the front of their shirt in letters no less than an inch high, according to the law. No less than an inch high. And these guys, if you're watching the video, you can see the picture of them, just look like dudes. Other than having maybe an earpiece in their ear, they just look like regular people. And there was a lot of concern about this. This story went international, and there's a lot of updates to give you on this. First of all, that Dr. Teresa Borenpahl has a GoFundMe that originally had the goal of raising $30,000. It's raised over 10 times that now. It's over $323,000, last I checked. You can find it at bit.ly/Idaho1A. Like Idaho First Amendment, Idaho 1A. That's all lowercase, bit.ly/Idaho1A, if you'd like to donate to her GoFundMe to raise money for legal defense. And of course, people are pointing out that this is, you know, the actions of brown shirts. Chris Cluey called this out. This is the beginning of fascism. There were also people that were calling out other attendees for merely filming this. Now, I get it. I get people saying, hey, why didn't anyone stand up and help her? Boy, if I was there, I would have jumped right in. And I agree to an extent. You do have to understand the set and setting. We are talking about North Idaho, where a person like me or you with progressive viewpoints is way outnumbered. Okay, way outnumbered. And these people can get violent up in North Idaho. So I understand the urge to want to protect, and we all have to make that decision how we would react in the same circumstance. Would we stand up and protect? I should hope that more people would now that this has happened, now that they've seen, hey, wait a minute, this is BS. This is fascism. This is Nazism. But I do want to get into what the substance of her protest was, because a lot of people may not know this background. And it's the fact that Idaho hates democracy. Particularly, the Idaho legislature hates democracy. She was pulled from the meeting because she was protesting a proposal by the Idaho legislature to repeal the Medicare expansion. Okay? Medicaid expansion. As you know, Medicaid was expanded through the Obama administration, and the states were given the choice of taking a whole bunch of free money from the feds to help their own state healthcare system to be able to provide more free healthcare to poor people. Well, we can't have that, said the Idaho legislature. And they refused to expand Medicaid. The Idaho legislature, with its supermajority Republican legislature, steadfastly refused to take this free money from the federal government to help sick people, poor sick people. Well, when 2018 came around, there was a group called Reclaim Idaho that put together a citizens initiative for Medicaid expansion. They would take it directly, and Idaho is one of the 24 states that has the direct initiative power where the people can write laws. You can put together an initiative and get the signatures to put it on the ballot. And if it passes at the ballot box with a simple majority, that's the new law. And I wanted to bring this up because I've got a lot of experience when it comes to the Idaho initiative system. I was a part of medical marijuana initiatives through 2016, 2018, 2020, and 2022. So I know in great detail the history and the procedures necessary in the Idaho initiative system. And the fact that Reclaim Idaho was able to get Medicaid expansion on the ballot at all was a huge victory. So on 2018, it makes the ballot, and shock of all shocks, the people of Idaho pass Medicaid expansion with 61% of the vote. I mean, that would even pass in Florida. 61% of the vote. That is a landslide when you're talking about Idaho electoral politics. A 3-2 margin supporting taking free money from the feds to provide health care to poor Idahoans. And Reclaim Idaho's initiative was the first success in decades because Idaho has one of the toughest systems, probably second toughest after Utah, to be able to get an initiative on the ballot. Now, the GOP in Idaho has been fighting for a couple decades now to whittle away that initiative power. And the main reason they wanted to was their fear of medical marijuana. When California passed medical marijuana in 1996, followed by Washington and Oregon in 1998, and by the year 2000, just about every state in the West had medical marijuana, Idaho's GOP was terrified that big money interests from out of state were going to come in and put together a successful medical marijuana initiative. So they made sure to try to put as many roadblocks in the way as possible. Now, to start off, the initiative process already is pretty difficult without them trying to put roadblocks in front of it. To get something on the ballot in the state of Idaho requires that you collect enough signatures equal to 6% of the total number of registered voters from the last gubernatorial election. So It's a target that changes every year. The last year I was trying to get an initiative on the ballot, it was 55,057 signatures you need. Now it's something like 70,000 because they've had an influx of population and more people have been voting. But 6% statewide is what was the original need for getting something on the ballot. But early on in Idaho's initiative history, they found out that, and this is like back in the 1900s, early 1900s, that getting 6% of the voters, getting, 50,000 voters, well, heck, you could just set up in Boise and collect all 50,000 signatures you needed and not have to go anywhere else in the state. So they added a geographic requirement to the initiative process. And the first geographic requirement that they initially did was to make it so that not only did you have to get 6% statewide, you've also got to get 6% in 22 out of Idaho's 44 counties. And they always, you've heard, this has happened in other states as well. They try to say, well, we don't want all the big city people making the decisions. You need to go out to the country and ask the country folks too. So they figure if you can get half the counties on board, then you've gotten most of the state on board. The problem with that, and it was brought up in 2001 in a lawsuit called the Idaho Coalition for Bears versus Senarusa, who was the Secretary of State at the time. And the Coalition for Bears were for the outdoor, wilderness bears. We're not talking about hairy gay guys. So the Idaho Coalition of Bears sued over this. Because they said, look, if you make it 22 out of 44 counties, 6% from each of them, then everybody's vote counts different, doesn't it? Everybody's signature counts different. Because if I need to get 6% out of a county with 1,000 people, well, I only need to get 60 signatures. If I need to get 6% out of a county with 100,000 people, well, now I got to get 6,000 signatures. So the signature in Little County is 100 times more worthwhile to me as a signature gatherer than a signature from big city. So the county thing actually flipped the script. It made it so instead of getting all the signatures from one big city like Boise, you could go to every little tiny county and get the signatures much faster. So it didn't really do what they wanted it to do in the first place. It just flipped the script. It made rural votes worth more than urban votes. Well, the Coalition for Bears sued, and they said, that's not right. That violates 14th Amendment, one man, one vote. And the Supreme Court agreed. The Idaho Supreme Court said, yeah, you can't do that by county because all the counties are different sizes. It makes all your 6% different. It's not going to work. So that's when the Idaho legislature changed the initiative process to make it 18 out of 35 legislative districts. Now, legislative districts are roughly the same size. There is some discrepancy. But then you got the same deal in that Boise contains about 14 districts, and nearby Nampa contains, well, Boise and Nampa contain about 14 together. Then you go out to Pocatello, Idaho Falls in the Coeur d'Alene area, you got your 18 districts. So it doesn't solve the problem they think they're solving, but that's the way the law is now. You got to get 18 out of 35 legislative districts. And you got 18 months to do this. You've got 18 months to do this, and it's okay to pay signature gatherers to get these signatures. And the sheets, when you're collecting the sheets of signatures, each sheet has to be county by county. So you got to collect 18 of 35 legislative districts, but Ada County has multiple districts in it. So it just makes a big paperwork issue and a lot harder to count because you have to verify who's in each district by each county sheet. And if you go to some big event, say you go to the fair and you try to collect signatures and people are coming from all over the state, you have to have a clipboard for each county. Like, which county do you live in? Payette County? Here's that clipboard. So the logistics and the printing and the personnel management you have to do for a signature campaign is exceptionally difficult to pull off. And then in 2020, they added another thing, which is the dreaded single subject rule. A single subject rule is one that says when you do an initiative, it can only cover one thing. You can't have the Feed the Puppies and Increase the Gas Tax Act, right? You can either feed the puppies or increase the gas tax. You can't do both. So they added the single subject rule in 2020, and what that has done in initiatives in other states, I can tell you, is make it so trying to pass medical marijuana is much more difficult. Because, for example, the single subject rule in Nebraska took down its medical marijuana initiative because it did two things. It allowed people to have medical marijuana and gave them a place to buy it. They considered the dispensary thing a second subject compared to the first subject, and it killed their medical marijuana initiative. So again, single subjects just put in there, once again, to make it more difficult to pass initiatives. But even with all of this, Reclaim Idaho managed to get on the ballot, managed to expand Medicaid back in 2018, and has been doing so since then. So for past 7 years, Idahoans have had expanded Medicaid, including me. I went back and lived in Idaho for that 1 year that I was doing the medical marijuana initiative. Just so happened that's when I needed to get a total knee replacement. So thanks to Reclaim Idaho and the 61% of the citizens of Idaho who voted for that, who passed that initiative, I have a total knee replacement that didn't cost me a dime. So I know this works. But even with that, and especially after Reclaim Idaho passed an initiative, that really terrified them, because they recognized not only are the roadblocks not high enough, are the hurdles not high enough to clear to stop them from getting something on the ballot, but if they do, the people of Idaho are far more progressive than the legislators. Now, that's a relative thing. They're not anywhere near progressive compared to the West Coast, but work with me on this, right? So since then, since about the mid-2000s, and especially after 2018, the Idaho legislature has been on a crusade to kill the initiative system. One of the things they've done is tried to increase the threshold from 6% to 10%. They've tried to increase the number of districts from 18 out of 35 to 24 out of 35, or even 35 out of 35. They actually went with a bill 1 year to make it, you have to get 6% in every single district. And this went to the Supreme Court. The Idaho Supreme Court said that violated the whole the purpose of the initiative power, because what it did is it would give one district veto power. Like all 34 districts could all say, yes, we want this initiative. And one district, if you didn't get enough signatures there, it wouldn't hit the ballot. So the Idaho Supreme Court declared that unconstitutional. And guess what? That same bill with the same language is working its way through the Idaho legislature again. I guess they figure, well, now Trump's in, maybe it's different. They also tried to shorten the circulation time from 18 months to 6 months, give you just 6 months to collect all those signatures. And the one that I found the most amazing, when I was trying to collect signatures for medical marijuana initiative, I realized, hey, you know where I could find a whole lot of Idahoans who are supportive of marijuana? At the dispensaries right across the border in Ontario, where Idahoans come every day to buy their marijuana. So I set up a booth there at one of the dispensaries and collected signatures from people from all over Idaho. I had people that would come from Pocatello, driving 5 hours one way to buy legal weed at these shops, who would sign my petitions. And it makes you wonder, right? Like, are there no weed dealers in Pocatello? There are, but people want to be legal. They want to buy their marijuana legally. So once I started doing this and it got on the news, the Idaho legislature proposed a bill to require that you have to sign an Idaho petition on Idaho soil. They really wanted to make it illegal for me to collect signatures in Ontario, Oregon. Now, it was making its way through the legislature until someone brought up, and maybe it was me, that doing this would disenfranchise every Mormon missionary currently serving out of state, would disenfranchise every member of Idaho's military serving overseas, or Idaho National Guard that are deployed out of state for whatever reason, firefighting or whatever. It would take away the signature rights of every Idaho businessman who's doing business out of town at the time that initiative comes up for signature. So that bill died, luckily, but it goes to show how far they'll go to try to stop democracy. In 2021, after, because when the COVID thing came up, the medical marijuana initiative that I was a part of got the most signatures of any attempt to put medical marijuana on the ballot. We were at 44,000 signatures, needing 55,000 when COVID hit in April of 2020. And then we went to the government and said, hey, look, you've got electronic signature power for all sorts of legal documents in this state, for car loans and liens and property deeds and all these other things that you can electronically sign things that the state of Idaho recognizes. Given that we have a pandemic going on, could we collect signatures electronically? And the legislature said no. Or the attorney general, I think it was, secretary of state, whoever it was, said no because that wasn't in the law. But just to make sure, the very next year, they passed a law explicitly banning electronic signatures from their initiative petitions. And of course, if none of these roadblocks will stop an initiative, they can do what they were planning on doing and what Dr. Teresa Borenpaul was protesting up there in North Idaho, and that is just rewrite or repeal the initiative altogether. That's what she was so angry about. That's what they refused to talk about, is how they want to thwart and overturn the will of a supermajority of Idahoans who passed a citizens' initiative, who went to the trouble of getting the signatures, and finally got Medicaid expansion to the people of Idaho. That's what she was protesting. So I call on everyone once again to boycott the state of Idaho, most particularly boycott the Idaho potatoes, the Idahoan potato products, McDonald's French fries. They come from Simplot, an Idaho company. Albertsons, Safeway, and Winco Foods, the grocery stores, are Idaho-based or owned by Idaho-based company or company that was started in Idaho. Jackson's Food Stores, the convenience stores in Idaho, you can boycott those. Boise Cascade, makers of building materials and paper products, boycott their products. Micron Technologies, makers of computers and chips and monitors, boycott them. And finally, Melaleuca, the nutraceutical company, the supplement company, let's boycott them as well. We've got to let these red states know that we blue states are the economically powerful ones, and they need us more than we need them. All right, time for the radical rant, and I implore the Democratic Party to please, please get on war footing. We are at war. Ask yourself, if there were another country that found a way to do a cyber attack to take out all of our infectious disease efforts, if there were a cyber attack that was to take down all our Social Security system, wouldn't we consider that an act of war by that country? Well, the call is coming from inside the House, people. The war is happening, and it's happening from our own administration. Democrats continue at the highest leadership levels to act as if this is just business as usual. It's just another day in the Beltway. We'll have another debate. We'll post another bill. We'll have another protest. No, we are at war with Elon Musk, with Doge, with MAGA, with this white Christian nationalist fascist movement. And it's time to start acting like it. But time and again, Democrats refuse to act like this is a war. And the latest example of this is in the case of Lori Chavez de Remmer. Lori Chavez de Remmer was the former congressperson for Oregon's 5th District. And she's a Republican. She lost her election in 2024. She lost her most recent election to Janelle Bynum, a Democrat who has flipped the seat. Okay. So Chavez de Remmer, the former Republican representative, is currently Trump's nominee for Secretary of Labor. And the Senate has this committee that looks at her, you know, qualifications, and decides whether or not she should be passed on to the full Senate for a confirmation vote. Now, this committee is 12 to 11 Republican. So, you know, as usual, if all 12 Republicans vote for her and all 11 Democrats vote against her, well, she's going to go on to the full Senate and probably become the Secretary of Labor. But in the committee, she had lost two Republican votes. So Chavez de Remer, the Republican nominee for Secretary of Labor, had all the Democrats voted against her, would not have made it out of committee. Guess what happened? Three Democrats voted for her. And I know one of them was Hickenlooper from Colorado. What the hell, Democrats? Why are you helping MAGA in any way possible? What, are you thinking that someone in Colorado is going to go, oh, you didn't vote for the Republican labor nominee. I'm going to vote against you, Hickenlooper. Who are these votes for? As I have said before, anybody who would accept a nomination from a 34-time felon, adjudicated rapist, convicted fraud, twice impeached Nazi insurrectionist who cheats on his wives and lusts after his daughter and kisses Putin's ass, anybody who'd accept a nomination from that person is by definition disqualified. What are you thinking? Like, oh, well, I'm sure if Trump picked her, she must be okay. My God, Democrats. This is just like what right now what's going on with the passport markers, with the transgender people, Marco Rubio and Secretary of State, shutting down USAID, killing our programs that deliver malaria nets to kids in Africa and Asia, keep them alive. Tens of thousands, hundreds, millions of people may die from what's going on from the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, and every single Democrat voted for him. Not one no vote. He passed 99-0 in the Senate. Democrats aren't acting like we're at war at all. They're continuing to give aid and comfort to the enemy by voting for his nominees. They should not only not vote for any of these nominees, they should be walking out of these hearings. They shouldn't even be attending them. What's the point? You know they're going to lie. RFK Jr. sat there and lied and lied and lied. And right now, what's he doing? He's stopping the FDA from evaluating next season's flu shots, so grandma and grandpa can die from the flu next year. We've got measles outbreaks happening. Do you disavow your anti-vax background? Oh, yeah, of course. Sure I do. Oh, I guess we can trust him. Trump nominated him. What the hell, Democrats? And to follow up on this Lori Chavez de Remer, I told you she lost her election in 2024. The Democrats flipped the seat. We flipped the seat in Oregon so that she was replaced by Janelle Bynum, a woman of color, a black woman. And what did she do? She voted for the Lake and Riley Act, that draconian immigration act that has been known as the Show Me Your Papers Act. She voted for that. She voted for Immigration and Customs Enforcement to stop anyone they think looks like an immigrant. You know, not Hugh Jackman, not Nicole Kidman, not Keith Urban, not that kind of looks like an immigrant. You know the kind. She voted for that. She voted for this fascist act. What's the point in flipping a seat if we're just going to get more fascism from Democrats? It is time for Democrats to recognize we are at war and start acting like it. And it's time for all these Democrats over the age of 60 to get primaried. And I swear, if someone just was to start the People's Party PAC and just start a fundraising effort that says, all we will do is support progressive Democrats who support FDR's Second Bill of Rights, that reject PAC money, that reject corporate money, that party would take off in an instant. Because I can tell you, not only are there a whole bunch of Democrats that are fed up, there's going to be a whole bunch of Republicans that recognize people that just vote their tribe, that just vote blue because that's the way they were raised, who are going to start to recognize, hey, we actually do need some government. Government actually is a good thing. Government actually does help us. Because if the Democrats continue going the way they are going the way of the Whig Party. Well, that's all the time we have here for the Radical Rush Show, which is written, produced, directed, engineered, designed, researched, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville. Well, except for this main theme, which is from We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation. And I got some other clips I posted according to fair use. Send your comments, kudos, and complaints by email to RadicalRuss@gmail.com at my Radical Russ YouTube channel or at Radical Russ on Blue Sky. If you'd like to help me with the bills, you can send me money via Venmo at Radical Russ, Cash App, $RadRuss, and there's a PayPal donation button at my website at RadicalRuss.com. Subscribe to the Radical Russ Show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other, citizens.